Blog Talk Radio.
Are you going to New York? Are you taking flight 18? What's your name?
Ty.
My man told me you were going to visit some relatives in New York. A sister, is it? I'm afraid to ask this next time. What's her name?
Sue.
Look, Ty, when we get to New York, how will I get my clothes back?
Pay me 88 cents a pound.
Something for me. I'm in trouble. Say.
Hey everybody, James Bossegger, Conservative Perspective, along with our good friend Jack Benny. And that's a classic bit that he and Mel Blanc did, and they perfected it from the days of radio and carried it over into television. And in keeping with this manufactured rhubarb over immigration policies, I kind of thought it was somewhat apropos. Good to be here with you. As I said, this is James Bossegger with Conservative Perspective. We do this live and in color, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern, daylight time. And we do that here at blogtalkradio.com. And what you do, you go to blogtalkradio.com, and then you'll pull up Patriot Nation, and then you can find us. Well, as usual, there's a boatload of stuff going on. And we're going to take a look at a couple of the leading lights in the Democrat Party. And I'm talking about Nancy Pelosi and Maxine Waters. Now, Maxine has been in the news here lately because basically what she's been doing is she has been calling for violence, fundamentally, against and harassing Trump supporters and Trump administration people. Now, this is serious business. Now, one of the reasons that this is serious business is a couple years ago, right before the election, and I can't remember the cat's name, but he was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and he went out and shot up it was a congressional baseball game, and they were practicing. Democrats versus the Republicans, and Republicans were out practicing. This guy went to the ballpark, took a rifle, started shooting elected officials. Now, I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders or Bernie Sanders' campaign was responsible for encouraging this guy to do that, because that never did happen. This guy, who was a Bernie Sanders supporter, which means he's a little bit suspect in the warm gear department upstairs anyway, took it upon himself to do this. However, the climate has changed considerably. You now have individuals openly calling for this. And Maxine Waters, first and foremost amongst them. The reason I'm sounding like a little bit distracted is I'm trying to find a clip that I had set up. I can't find it. And that always jams a weed up my O-ring when that happens. But at any rate, you've seen what she's been saying. And you saw what happened at the Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia, little restaurant, one of them liberal, you know, one of them fancy restaurants where they put mushrooms on the cheeseburgers and they don't cook the green beans. It's that kind of place. And you know, the kind of highbrow thing. Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her family, you know, they go to this restaurant to eat, and they're in the restaurant, and then the owner comes out and they make this big old deal about taking the moral high ground, and she just cannot in good conscience serve a Nazi propaganda minister like Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So they get up and they leave. What do you do? Okay, you don't, you know, and these people are class people, so they just got up and they left. Well, we have found out in the interim that as they were leaving, the owner of this restaurant, whoever this chick is who doesn't deserve to have her name put out there, grabs a few of her people, and they go to the restaurant. They follow Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her group. They follow them to another restaurant where they just, you know, where they're going to go eat. And then they stand outside and they heckle and demand that the owners of this restaurant throw them out too. Of course, that didn't happen, but just crazy stuff. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services, you know, they're laying siege to her house. They're gathering around her house. She ran out of a restaurant not too long ago. And these calls for this kind of harassment for this kind of confrontation, it's really serious. Because as we've seen since Donald Trump won the election, is basically the unhinging, the maddening of the left. And now we've gotten to this point where, you know, if you not only is Donald Trump not only is Donald Trump a Nazi, but us, we as supporters are also Nazis as well. They've stripped away any veneer in what they're doing. And the two people, Maxine Waters taking the lead on this, Nancy Pelosi, and I guess basically the only time Nancy Pelosi is not the craziest woman in the room is when she's in a room with Maxine Waters, is trying to pull back on this, but it's not working at all. You've got too many people that are allowing this. They insist on it almost. They encourage it. They don't decry it. And so you've got the media. You've got people like that clown who, you know, all these clowns in Hollywood that are desperately trying to be relevant. Peter Fonda. Peter Fonda is 117 years old, and he's got another movie coming out. Who's Peter Fonda? I know. He had one decent picture a half century ago. His dad was famous. His sister was a traitor. And you know, so he wants to jump in the relevancy game because he sees all these people saying things without consequence. They say that he's apologized, and I don't care if he's apologized or not. It's probably not sincere, and it doesn't mean a thing. He's under pressure from Sony Pictures because, like I said, he's got a movie due to be released. And they want to, you know, they're going to, well, you're going to have to play nice, Pete. So he says something he doesn't really mean. He meant what he said originally. He doesn't mean this. So someone who's even deeply and further unhinged than what we see from people in the media like Rachel Maddow or Chris Matthews or Chris Cuomo or Peter Fonda or any of these fools that are out, Maxine Waters, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, all these people that are Nazi this, Nazi that, what's going to happen? Well, somebody who's a little bit crazier than these cats, who looks up to them and actually thinks that the professional athlete or the rap singer or the Hollywood movie star knows anything at all about immigration policy, about anything for that matter, that knows anything about anything at all. They just don't. But they're going to take these things to heart. And it could be that right now, while we're talking about this, somebody's planning something. Somebody's looking at where a bunch of these officials are going to be, or they're, you know, trying to figure out how they can be effective, and they're getting plans. And what I am afraid of, and I say this without any shame whatsoever, I genuinely fear that someone's going to get hurt. Now, there have already been people hurt. Antifa has beat up on Trump supporters at rallies across the country before and after the election. And when I say beat up, I mean cracked in the noggin with a tube sock filled with a combination lock, that kind of stuff. Seriously hurt. And they're not discriminating who it is. Women, old people, doesn't matter. So something has to be done about this, and I don't know what's going to be done, because the ordinary people that would be responsible for being the cooler heads and prevailing in this situation are the ones that are also feeding fuel to this fire. And I still haven't found a damn clip, so I don't know what's going to happen here. I'm not going to worry about it anymore. But when we talk about this and they make these cries for civility, listen, here's what's going on. And there is a distinction that we need to look at very carefully between what they are calling political protest and what it really is. And what it really is political terrorism. You see, political protest is meant to register and rally opposition to a given policy or plan. Political terrorism is designed to threaten, to intimidate, and harass. Protest seeks to build a consensus against a particular party or policy. Terrorism, on the other hand, wants to intimidate people into abandoning the policy. So this latest round of lefty harassment that we see brought on by Maxine Waters targeting individuals, whether they're threatening members of the Trump administration or they're being harassed and doxxed. And what do I mean by that? Well, they're giving out their home addresses and their phone numbers and stuff. ICE personnel have had this happen to them. So you got people calling them, people threatening them, people harassing them nonstop. This is political terrorism. James Hodgkinson. Thank you. The name just came to me. That was the nut. That was the wing nut Bernie Sanders supporter that shot up Republicans there at the baseball practice last year, the congressional baseball game. Now, for the most part, as it stands at this point in time, it generally hasn't gone quite that violent yet. But, folks, listen, that's the path. That's the trajectory that we're heading on. And anyone who denies this, well, they're just kidding themselves. This phony outrage is being mobilized to do what? Well, to overturn the norms in our politics. The next stage after direct harassment, which is what we're seeing now, and this is what Maxine Waters is encouraging, and there are a number of those in the media who are tacitly encouraging this and sanctioning it. Well, the next step after this type of harassment, direct harassment, which is what we see, is violence. Now, that violence might start off with fake bomb threats and then real bombs accompanied by warnings, as these are the gradual stages before we see full-on terrorism. But if the left remains on the course it's on, and at this point, I see no course correction, I see no changes, that's the direction we're going to go. And that is why you see some Democrat leaders, Nancy Pelosi for one, panicking. Within the Democrat Party, there is a split between those on the left who want to gain power politically through the system, and then there are those who want to violently attack the system in a direct fashion. And that war between the Democrats is out in the open. Political terrorism against administration personnel is a gateway drug. Just as the early hashtag resistance riots were a gateway drug, the furious celebrity tweets, the petitions, the daily doses of fury fed by everyone from David Brock to the Washington Post. Some on the left don't see where this is going, but some do. You break down the norms of civility. You scream that we're in an emergency and that there's no time to talk about manners. When you have, you know, children being caged and Muslims are being murdered, you can advocate any form of violence fundamentally and get away with it. The left has been prying open its own Overton window, and it is preparing to go full 1970s again. Its talking media heads are going to keep on insisting that it's all political protest right up until the bombs start going off, but it's not political protest. Terrorizing individuals is not a protest. That is terrorism. It's political terrorism, whether it's practiced on a campus or on Capitol Hill. And the left has always had an affinity for terrorism. It just needed an excuse to radicalize its base enough to see it as acceptable, and now it has that excuse. The rest is history. James Woods said it best in a tweet the other day. Conservatives, get a gun, learn how to use it, and vote. Because the truth of the matter is, believe it or not, it can't happen here, as we would all love to say. Our lives may depend upon it, and that's no joke. The vitriol and the meanness and the hate-filled speech that's coming out of the left over this ginned up, over this manufactured crisis on the border is a frightening thing, because there are so many, you know, it's compounded because it's not just radical politicians, it's the complicitous and duplicitous media, it's celebrities, it's athletes, it's any media figure, from movie stars to producers to directors to athletes to singers to politicians. And they're all saying the same thing. They're all saying, go, man, go. And I really am. This is no joke. I really am frightened that someone is going to get hurt. Someone's seriously going to get hurt. These words, and people can say what they want to say. That's how we do things here. The left stands up and cheers when this morally self-righteous bistro owner takes a woman and her family to task over a political ideology. That's wonderful. Like I said, the left stands up and cheers. But let a Christian baker refuse to do a wedding cake for a same-sex marriage, watch him stand up and try to burn the bakery down. Double standard much, you guys? Jesus. One of the things that we can take heart in, and I've mentioned it in programs before, and it is a real thing. It's not a myth. It's reality. And it's had a name. It's been around for a number of decades, and that is, and Nixon coined it, the vast silent majority. And there really is such a thing. It's you and me and others like us. We don't have time to go to protests because we got jobs to go to. We have family members we got to look after. We got kids we got to raise. We got yards we got to mow. We've got friends we have to take care of and look after and see to. We have lives as citizens, and we are a sleeping giant. Like Donald Trump said in one of his tweets the other day addressing Maxine Waters, you better be careful what you wish for. It's not a good thing, no matter what happens. And I think that we're going to have to go through some of it. We're going to have to go through some of it until a point is made forcefully that it simply cannot be tolerated by us, by you and I. I don't know what that point is. And I don't know what exactly forcefully would mean in making that point. And I am not advocating violence. I would not. But I do advocating you looking to yourself and to your family and to make sure that they are protected, whatever that may mean. Well, we're down to the bottom of the hour, and I'm hoping desperately that my music selection comes up. And miracle of miracles, it sure did. We will be back. We're going to go to it a little bit early, a little bit long musical break, because quite frankly, I'm tired of talking and I need a little extra time to figure out what on earth I'm going to talk about next. We will be back with more of a conservative perspective right after this. Speaking of the 1970s.
I'm
Oh, yeah. James Bostic back here with Conservative's Perspective. We are doing this live, and we do it live twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And then we have a recorded version that we do on the weekends. That's when that goes to microphone. And that is on the Talk America Radio Network. And you can go to talkamericaradio.org. And you can check them out there. There are two audio streams. There's the Liberty and the Justice stream. ACP is heard on either one of those at varying times throughout the day and the week. And last week marked a bit of a milestone. It has been 2 years since my association began with Talk America Radio. Been in this business, well, business, hobby, because I'm not getting paid. If you ain't getting paid, it's a hobby. I've been doing this for coming up on 7 years. November, Thanksgiving weekend in November will mark my 7th year of doing this, and the last two have been spent very happily with the folks over at Talk America. Mark and I have been doing this on the Patriot Nation radio network for 4 years, I think, and had a lot of fun with it. Wouldn't trade it for anything. Okay, you know, a lot of people are still out there screaming bloody murder, and the reason that I've got to go through this yet again is because the mainstream fake news industrial complex that, in the words of my friend Dr. Sebastian Gorka, that miasma of the fake news industrial complex are still trying to make this 20-year-old law look like some kind of evil, barbaric indulgence that Donald Reichsfuhrer Trump and his SS minions have decided to impose against the poor, innocent Mexican families. So, and some people call these, now I call them illegal aliens. They're here, they're not supposed to be. They've come into the country illegally, hence the term illegal alien. I like it. It fits. Some of them, some of the pundits, some of the heads out there, they like to call them economic migrants, and that's probably true because they're moving from whatever their terrible economy is in Mexico, and they're coming up here, and they're jumping on the entitlement bandwagon, and so, you know, they've improved their situation economically dramatically. And Democrats love this because they want as many illegal aliens on the dole as they can get because that's their voter base, Jack. Give them enough. Not a lot, just enough. And they'll be voting Democrat for the next 100 years. So the latest ginned up thing that we're dealing with has to do with this immigration policy that the Trump administration, this 20-year-old immigration policy that the Trump administration is enforcing no differently. Perhaps, if I say this, if there is any difference, there's, I think, a considerable amount of change in the level of humanity and compassion that is being displayed with the Trump administration as opposed to the Obama administration. How do we know this? Okay, every crappy, heart-rending photo that wasn't staged, that's been put out there on social media and legitimate news services, every one of them that's been fake has been a throwback from the Obama administration, or again, I said, it was engineered, it was produced, it was manufactured, ponied up. So, as usual, this outrage that we see obscures more than it illuminates, so we got to walk through again what's happening here. Heal me, Jesus. For the longest time, illegal immigration was driven primarily by single males from Mexico. But over the last decade, that flow has shifted to women, children, and I'm using my air fingers quotes here, family units from Central America. This poses challenges that we haven't confronted before. And it's made what was once relatively minor wrinkles in the law appear to loom very large indeed. Now, the Trump administration isn't changing the rules that pertain to separating an adult from the child. Those remain the same. Separation happens only if you find that the adult is falsely claiming to be the child's parent or is a threat to the parent or is put into criminal proceedings. And it's the last part of that sentence that's operative here. Put into criminal proceedings. The past practice had been to give a free pass to the adult who was part of a family unit. The new Trump policy is to prosecute all adults. The idea is to send a signal that we are serious about our laws and to create a deterrent against reentry. Now, illegal entry is a misdemeanor. Illegal reentry, a felony. When an illegal alien is prosecuted for illegal entry, he or she is taken into custody by the U.S. Marshals. In no circumstance anywhere in the United States do the Marshals care for the children of the people they take into custody. The child is taken into the custody of Health and Human Services, who cares for them at temporary shelters. The proceedings are exceptionally short, assuming there is no aggregating factor like a prior illegal entry or another crime. The migrants generally plead guilty, and then they're sentenced to time served, typically all on the same day, although practices vary along the border. And after this, they are returned to the custody of ICE. Not dead air. If the adult then wants to go home, in keeping with the expedited order of removal that is issued, as a matter of course, it's relatively simple. The adult should be reunited quickly with his or her child and the family returned home as a unit. In this scenario, there is only a very brief separation. When it becomes much more of an issue is if the adult files an asylum claim. Now, in that scenario, the adults are almost certainly going to be detained longer than the government is allowed to hold their children. That's because of something called the Flores Consent Decree from 1997. Bill Clinton was president of the United States in 1997. And what the Flores Consent Decree says is that unaccompanied children can only be held for 20 days. A ruling by the Ninth Circuit extended this 20-day limit to children who come as part of family units. So even if we want to hold a family unit together, we are forbidden by law from doing so. The clock ticking on the time the government can hold a child will almost always run out before an asylum claim is settled. The migrant is allowed 10 days to seek an attorney, and there may be continuances or other complications. This creates the choice of either releasing the adults and the children together into the country pending the adjudication of the asylum claim, or holding the adults and releasing the children. If the adult is held, Health and Human Services places the child with a responsible party in the U.S., ideally a relative, because these migrants, these illegal aliens, are likely to have family and friends here. Even if the Flores Consent Decree did not exist, the government would be very constrained in how many family units it can accommodate. ICE has only about 3,000 family spaces in shelters. It's also limited in its overall space at the border, which is overwhelmed right now by the ongoing influx. This means that whatever the Trump administration would prefer to do, many adults are still swiftly released. So why try to hold the adults at all? First of all, if an asylum seeker is detained, it means that the claim goes through the process much more quickly, a couple of months or less rather than years. Second, if an adult is released while the claim is pending, the chances of ever finding that person again once he or she is in the country are dicey to say the least. it is tantamount to allowing the migrant to live here no matter what the merit of the case. I know, kind of weedy, but, you know, the weedier it is, the better they like it, and they bank on us not going into the weeds, and by God, we're going. So just keep quiet and stay behind me and pay attention. A couple of points about all this. Number one, family units can go home quickly this way. The option that both honors our laws and keeps the family units together is a swift return home after prosecution, after running them through the system, get them back together, get them out of here. But immigrant advocates hate this because they want the migrants, the illegal aliens, to stay in the United States. How you look at this question will depend a lot on how you view the motivation of the migrants and how seriously you take our laws and our borders. Another point we can look at is that there is a better way to claim asylum. Every indication tells us that this illegal alien flow to the United States is discretionary. Now, it nearly dried up at the beginning of the Trump administration when migrants believed they had no chance of getting in the United States. Now, it's getting going full guns again because the message got out that despite the rhetoric and the promises made, the policy at the border has not changed. This suggests that the flow overwhelmingly consists of what we call economic migrants, prefer to live in the United States rather than victims of persecution, i.e. asylum seekers in their home country who have no option but to get out. So let's say that an illegal alien does have a credible fear of persecution. And that's why you claim asylum. It's got the government is going to kill me because I'm speaking out against this or that, or I'm of a particular race or a particular tribe, and the government doesn't like that those people, and they're trying to cleanse their country of them, which means they want to kill them or run them off. I got to get out of here. They've already killed my uncle, and they're going to get me. So if that's the case, there's a legitimate way to pursue that claim if you're on the level. And that doesn't involve entering the United States illegally. First thing, these people should make their asylum claim in the very first country where they feel safe. So in other words, if we've got a Guatemalan coming to the United, passing through Mexico and coming to the United States to claim asylum, no, you can't do that. It's the first safe country. So that would be Mexico. Well, Mexico has a much more virulent anti-immigration and illegal alien policy than we do. They send them back at the point of a bayonet. Second, if for some reason they're threatened everywhere except the United States, they should show up at a port of entry and make their claim there rather than crossing the border illegally. Why? Because that's the rules, y'all. And another thing we need to look at, and a lot of people, you know, there's a significant moral cost that goes along with not enforcing the border. There's obviously a moral cost to separating a parent from a child, and almost everyone would prefer not to do it. But under current policy and with current resources, the only practical alternative is letting family units who show up at the border live in the country for the duration. Not only does this make a mockery of our laws, it creates an incentive to keep bringing children with them. And again, rugged territory, desert, rattlesnakes, scorpions, and no shortage of any other type of predators. Needless to say, children shouldn't be making this journey, fraught with peril as it is. But now, see, it's been incentivized. Because of how we've handled these cases, illegal aliens are seeing the payoff in crossing the border with kids. And these guys are even admitting that they brought kids not only to get them out of the danger from wherever they were, if there was any, but because they believe that if they bring kids, it'll cause the authorities to turn them loose quicker. They even admit to posing falsely with children who are not their own. And that type of fraud is increasing. If someone was really determined to come here legally, the decent thing, the safest thing to do would be to leave the kid at home with a relative and then send money back home. I think it's $2 billion a year goes back into Mexico from the United States from illegal aliens working here and getting paid under the table and still sending a piece of the action back to the family in Nogales. But because we favor family units over single units, we're creating this incentive to drag these kids through the desert. Real family, pretend family, doesn't matter. These kids are being put in terrible, terrible danger. And the last point we can take away from this is, and this is probably the biggest one, Congress could fix this. Congress could change the rules so that the Flores consent decree didn't apply anymore. And it could appropriate more money for family shelters at the border. This is an obvious thing to do that would eliminate, number one, the tension between enforcing our laws and separating kids from families. The Trump administration is throwing as many resources as it can at the border to expedite this process, and it desperately wants the Flores consent decree reversed. The missing piece in all of this is Congress, and they could fix it. But they're too busy hating on Donald Trump to share any of that hatred with Congress. They want to pile it all on the president, and they want to leave these clowns in Congress fundamentally unmolested. And so since nobody is shining the light and turning the heat on them, the odds are not much is going to be done. And so this perverse system will remain in place, and this long-standing crisis at the border will continue to rumble on. Unless the issue is forced by we, the electorate. And you know what? That's what it always comes down to. We had 8 years of Barack Obama, 8 disastrous freaking years of that juggy. Oh my, okay, 8 years. And this guy and his dudes did everything they could to turn us into a banana republic, to turn us into a third world nation. I don't care what you say. I don't, what about it? Almost destroyed this country. But 63 million people said, you know what? No. We're not going to let this happen. Because there's this guy, see? And he's been talking a lot of stuff that I've been saying amongst my friends, or he's been saying a lot of stuff that I've kept to myself. And now I feel validated because I know I'm right. Because if this guy's thinking it, I'm not the only one. And there's a lot of guys like me and this guy. And of course, we're talking about Donald Trump. And, you know, people don't want to see him as the outsider. He is. Yeah, he's got a lot of money. And in terms of the establishment, he has moved in and among establishment types. He practices commerce with them or had. Okay, yeah. But when it comes to Washington and what's best for the country as opposed to what's best for John McCain or what's best for Nancy Pelosi and her pals and her little fiefdom, or what's best for Mitch McConnell and his buddies. Yeah, he's an outsider because he's not interested in that. He wants what's best for America, whereas a large portion of these establishment types want what is best for them and theirs. You see? They always say, or at least they have since the Second World War, you take the most flack when you're right over the target, and that's absolutely true. Look at all the flack this cat's been taking in this last week. Unemployment in this country is at 3.8%. That is unfrickin' believable. That is a generational low. Black and Latino unemployment are at historic lows. The economy is booming. Corporations are giving out bonuses. People are seeing more money in their checks. This is a good time. It is the best time that we've seen in a long time. And this time can be expanded. This time, even this time, as good as it's getting, can be improved upon. But it is up to us, those 63 million Americans that said, no, no, you clowns have done enough, and it's time for the adults to restore order to the room. You got to be informed. The left talks about being woke. Oh, my God. Woke. They woke up and found this thing that they're so jacked up about has been going on for 20 years, and that two of their presidents did it the whole time. The Trump administration has done nothing except improve upon the conditions that these four people are being detained in. It is the same law. It is no different than when Bill Clinton did it, as when George W. Bush did it, as when Barack Hussein Obama Jr., the third trademark registered patent pending limit did it. Oh, 90 seconds, we're down. It's the same law. Like I said, he has improved it. He has made it more humane. He has increased and improved upon its morality and made it a better and just law in what he's doing. And we're out of time, so we're just going to leave it there at that. We'll probably pick up on this stuff on Thursday. Again, we will be live Thursday here, blogtalkradio.com. You go find Patriot Nation Radio Network. And Thursdays, thank you, Penelope. And Thursdays, 7 to 8, of course, it's ACP. And then from 8 to 9, you got Mark Hoffman of Patriot Nation Radio Live, the best 1-2 punch combination in all of alternative talk media. I'm James Bostic. This has been ACP. Thank you for listening. I enjoy the opportunity to get to spend a little time with you. We will be back on Thursday, Lord willing, and the river don't rise, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.